Welcome to Measuring Success Right, the official podcast of the Marriott Student Review, a podcast for students by students, where we connect the leaders of tomorrow with the issues of today.
Hello, and welcome to a new episode of Measuring Success Right. I'm your host, Luke Jorgensen, and we're excited to have another guest with us from the Ballard Brief, Sydney Ward. Sydney is a senior at Brigham Young University studying public relations and civic engagement leadership. She is passionate about youth civic engagement and volunteers as communications director at Girls Lobby, a local nonprofit dedicated to increasing communication between girls and the Utah State Legislature. Previously, she worked with the educational equity organization Student Voice to uplift student stories during the COVID-19 pandemic. Her op-eds on civic education have been published by Miss Magazine, the Center for Information on Research and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement, and Teen Vogue. Sydney, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
No problem. We're very excited to have you. This is an interesting topic to talk about, and we have a few questions that we want to kind of dive in with you. First of all, I kind of want to ask when you first became interested in writing and how you developed this talent.
Yeah, that's a great question. As a kid, I would write kind of short stories and develop those into narratives, but that's not quite what sparked my passion for research, like this Ballard Brief. I participated in debate in high school, and kind of writing those arguments orally and then having to back that up with research kind of showed me how to piece together an argument in a way that was compelling and persuasive for the general public and could really like make a difference in people's lives.
That's awesome. Kind of for all those who maybe haven't listened to previous podcasts about the Ballard Brief, can you kind of explain a little bit about what that is and then kind of introduce your topic to us?
Yeah, so the Ballard Brief is a course at BYU that's a mentored research project on a social issue, and you kind of walk through all of the stages of what are the contributing factors to that social issue, what are the best practices to solve it, and really dive deep into the research of what it is and how it affects society. And so the topic that I chose was civic education in the United States and the lack of quality that we have in that right now. Civic education is affected by curriculum, teachers, legislation, all of these different factors. And all of those kind of come together to create an ecosystem where students might not be learning at the same rate as their peers on the other side of the country. And so I was really curious to investigate how that lack of consistent quality civic education is affecting our country and the consequences that it can have on students.
That's interesting. I really like that topic, and I think it's something that's good for all of us to be aware of and to talk about, especially nowadays. I think it's becoming more apparent that it's important in schools. And so I guess according to your research and to your opinions, why is it important to focus on civics education in public schools?
Civic education is important in schools for two reasons. First, it develops skills that voters need when participating in the political arena. So those 18 and up are eligible to vote. Civic education is really where those skills start. And second, high quality civic studies courses emphasize critical thinking and talking about political events. And it's no secret that we live in a divided political society. And so civic education can really be the make or break point for young people learning to engage in that political system.
That's awesome. As I was reading through the article, there was a statistic that kind of stuck out to me, and I thought it would be interesting to kind of ask you about. But it was that only 24% of students are proficient in civics learning, And so could you tell us a little bit about that statistic?
Yeah, so that statistic comes from the National Assessment of Education Progress, the NAEP, and that's a national standardized exam that's given to all 8th and 12th graders every 4 years. So only a sample of students take it, but that statistic comes from a test of 8th graders in 2018, and it showed that only 24% of students who took the course or the exam only scored proficient in civic knowledge and their understanding of government and politics. And that represented no change from 2014, which is very interesting. So only 24% of students are proficient in civics. And that percentage is mirrored in AP US history and AP government exams as well.
That's interesting. Kind of a side comment to that with the AP classes. Did you ever take any AP history or anything back in high school or early years of college?
I did. And one thing I couldn't put in this brief, but is kind of a funny anecdote. In my government class, I had to memorize the 26th Amendment, but never learned how to register to vote, which I think is kind of an example of how civic ed is really, they're doing a good job learning the textbook knowledge of things. We learn the three branches of government. We learn the amendments, but maybe not so much emphasizing the skills that we need to act in the civic arena.
So you mentioned that there should be a shift in from like memorization of facts to more of a critical thinking approach to civics education. What would that look like in a classroom setting?
So the research on this isn't quite clear, but in reading some of the anecdotes from teachers while writing the brief, there were some common themes in that asking students what they think about an issue and asking students to evaluate those issues from other people's point of views, that was a common theme. And so in a classroom, that might look like asking someone, how would FDR respond to this agricultural law? Or how would you want this law to be passed? Asking students to do that personal and historical application is really useful. And it does two things. It gets students deeply thinking about issues outside their own political bubble. And it also involves them in skills necessary for political action, which is like research and thinking deeply about how things apply to you.
So how do you think teachers could incorporate discussion on important but controversial topics without bias?
This is tricky, I think, because those controversial topics are often determined by kind of the society around us, not necessarily the curriculum in the classroom. And the research shows that it's often not the teacher's fault that things are viewed as controversial. 81% of teachers want to talk about politics and elections in their classes, but only 28% find support from parents in that endeavor. And even fewer see support from administration and principals in talking about politics and current events. And so that presents a really difficult place for teachers. Do they talk about these essential skills that students need and these current events that would really engage students in politics? Or do they stay silent and stay in a safer kind of sphere? And so I think, you know, absent that trust there, teachers should be able to set ground rules inside their classroom for communities of trust with students so that all perspectives can be shared and valued. And it isn't necessarily them endorsing one party or another, but just having a discussion about political ideas and values. So it's easier said than done, certainly, and especially in a divisive political climate. But I do think that encouraging teachers to have those tough discussions is something that is in the best interest of everybody, because those students are going to be the ones running our country someday, and they should know how to think critically about issues.
So these classes are funded in different ways, and you mentioned there was a little bit of funding inequality in the civics department. Could you talk a little bit about that funding inequality of civics among other subjects?
Yeah, so federally, 50 cents is allocated for STEM for every 5 cents that's given to civics. And that's simply because federal laws allocate money differently and emphasize different subjects. And it means that civics has a lack of resources and also a lack of staff. at the federal funding level. And so the Every Student Succeeds Act kind of dictates this. That's the federal statute for education funding. And there are some civics provisions in it, but they've never been fully funded by Congress. And so that's kind of the federal landscape. Education is mainly funded by the states, and so each state has their own way of doing it. And because most education funding comes from property taxes, students who live in one zip code may have more funding for civics than those in another. And the research is a little unclear as to the extent to which that differs between districts, but it can certainly be said that a student in a wealthier school district is going to receive more resources towards civics education than one in a poorer district.
And then a follow-up question to that, what's kind of the outcome when one individual from maybe a more wealthy area receives more civics education than another person?
That's a great question. And it results in higher test scores. It results in more opportunities to engage with their community directly. So they'll have more service learning opportunities, most likely. They'll have a teacher who can take the time to bring in a state representative or a nonprofit to talk about how civics works in the real world. And they'll have an opportunity to apply their skills, maybe in their local community. And a student in a district who might not be as fortunate, the data shows that marginalized students who might live in those poorer districts perform 3% worse on standardized tests measuring civics ed and 30% lower on that NAEP exam that we talked about earlier if they're an English language learner. And so that really shows that they call it the civic empowerment gap between students who might have a more fully funded civics education.
So what are some of the consequences of poor civic education?
That's a great question. And it has a lot of bearing on what the future of our country looks like, what the state of our civic education is now. And so kind of the three that are outlined in the brief are that marginalized students, like we just talked about, are left behind in civic education. They don't have those opportunities to gain civic skills. Second is the polarization and regionalism of political beliefs. Youth from rural households are less likely to be civically engaged in their adult life. And it also develops a lack of critical thinking for students who might be in a politically isolated area. So an area that is more one party than another and doesn't enable them to have access to a lot of beliefs. And then the third thing is the development of knowledge gaps. So students just might not have the knowledge about the history of our country, about how to vote, that they would have gotten had they had quality civic education.
That's interesting. So that kind of brings us to some solutions that you had in your article. In your article, you outlined a practice called Action Civics. Could you explain what that is along with any other thoughts you have on improving civic education?
In the article, I talk about a group called Generation Citizen, which is a civic education nonprofit that employs Action Civics curriculum. And that essentially takes students in a classroom and connects them with a community partner to do a project for a semester. So it enables them to be civic actors, not caring about whether they can vote or whether they can participate in other political events, but just trusting in their ability and their autonomy to complete something in their community. And so a central part of that is centering student voices. And I think that that is a really vital part of this because I think a lot of students go through high school and don't pay attention in their government classes or their history classes because, oh, well, political parties don't matter. Like, I won't vote until I'm 18 anyways. Or, oh, I won't vote until I get to college. But that doesn't mean they don't have a responsibility now to learn those foundational skills. And we have a responsibility to teach them that so that that foundation is there when the time comes for them to vote. And so thinking about how we can get students to experience politics now before they head to the voting booth looks like action civics projects that involve students in their local community. I think it also looks like mock elections, nonprofit partners, talking to state and local representatives in real time to give students and young people that taste of, I can make a difference now. And how unique the United States is and that it allows every person to engage in the political process.
Well, Sydney, I honestly personally enjoyed reading your article. I think that it was very well articulated and had some amazing points in there. I think everyone should go and read her article as well. Our last question of the day is talking about success. And to me, in my opinion, that was a very successful Ballard brief that you wrote. But in your overall opinions, how do you measure success in your life?
Well, thank you. I think that in my life, I kind of just judge everything on a scale of, am I doing something good for the world? And am I doing something meaningful for myself? And if it checks both of those boxes, then I think I'm successful. So,
I love that. We would like to thank Sydney for being on our podcast today. Go check her article out from the Ballard Brief at ballardbrief.org. See you all next time.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or SoundCloud so you never miss an episode. Be a friend and tell a friend about Measuring Success Right.
This podcast is a project of the Marriott Student Review at Brigham Young University. You can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Marriott Student Review or online at marriottstudentreview.org.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast do not necessarily reflect official policy or position of Brigham Young University or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.